Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. This is where top performers share their secrets to help you achieve your personal and your professional goals. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my amazing guests, we bring you inspiring and actionable insights to help you take your life and your business to the next level. Ranked in the top 2% of podcasts globally, this really is a must listen. And again, it's all because of my guests. So whether you're tuning in for entrepreneurial tips, career advice, or personal development strategies, get ready to turn inspiration into action, challenges into triumphs, and dreams into reality. So in this episode, I'm pretty excited about this one. I'm excited about all of them, but I'm really excited about meeting with Christina Wise. We're going to be delving into the four money laws of financial freedom with my guest, Christina Wise. She is a renowned real estate mogul and investor who stands as a millionaire coach, best-selling author, and influential speaker. Having founded several seven-figure businesses, she achieved her freedom number, and I'm going to ask her about that, and now aims to empower fellow entrepreneurs to build both a seven-figure business and a personal net worth, paving the way for financial freedom and early retirement. See why I'm excited? So through her mentorship, Christina guides high-income entrepreneurs in leveraging business profits to generate personal wealth and passive income. Very important. Pay attention. Take down notes, y'all. Listen. Passive income. All while prioritizing their health, mindset, and sanity. And as the host of the Christina, you're going to have to tell me how to pronounce it. Podcast and author of Falling for Money, a romance novel for your bank account. Love that title. And creator of Wealthy Wealthy. Again, I'm going to have to ask about that. And the Wise Money Method. Christina is dedicated to fostering financial success and happiness. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, Christina. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. You have a great voice. My goodness, I'm in your trance. I keep talking.
And I was thinking the whole time, man, I sound raspy. It is what it is. How do I pronounce your podcast? Is it Wealthy Wealthy? What is it?
It is Wealthy Wealthy. And quick story just behind the name. And for everybody listening, it's wealthy, like the money wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H. And then the second wealthy is wealthy, W-E-L-L-T-H-Y. So Wealthy Wealthy, kind of play on names there. And that came out of the story that for most of my career that started in real estate, I was always chasing the money. I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be wealthy. I wanted to be a millionaire, then a multimillionaire. And I achieved all that. I was very successful, built many businesses, and had a really successful career during that time. But what I wasn't doing during that time is I wasn't taking care of myself. I was burning the candle on both ends. I thought sleep was for the weak. I was traveling, single mothering it, trying to be a good mother. I was tied to perfection. I was building a great big business. We're growing really fast. And I was running marathons at the time. So I actually thought it was healthy. But what I was doing is I was always pushing myself to the limits because I was chasing the success. I was chasing the goal. I was chasing the achievement. Ultimately, underneath all that, I was chasing self-worth, thinking the more popular I was, the more successful I was, then that meant something about me. And it was never enough because I think deep down, I never felt like enough. And it all came crashing down when I built all this successful business and some really nice assets for my net worth. And I lost my health. I had a significant health crisis and it took me out. It took me out of the game for like 2 years. In that time, I lost my business. I had to trade in and sell most of my assets to pay for my living because I couldn't work anymore and to cover the cost of the healthcare and things that weren't covered by insurance. And I just learned during that journey that, oh my gosh, It's not about chasing the money. It's not all about money and success. I was chasing the wrong thing. And I was using and abusing my body. I was trading for my health for wealth. And so it became very clear to me that this journey is about fulfillment. It's about enjoyment. It's truly about happiness and knowing how much money is enough and knowing we're enough and just all this underlying personal development and personal understanding and personal love and love of self and then self-care that caused me to realize like, oh, life is about the journey. Life is about, again, the fulfillment and happiness, and money is just a part of it. Money's not the be-all end-all. Life is the be-all end-all, and money is just, it kind of underwrites the cost of being able to live a good life. So that flipped everything, and it made my focus on the wellness piece, the wealthy, but we need money to be wealthy, and realize that, oh my gosh, these two things go together, and one without the other doesn't really amount to that much. And, you know, when I lost my health, my money and my success didn't matter. All I wanted was to live. I wanted to get my life back. And hence the name Wealthy Wealthy. And here I am today talking about money and financial freedom, but for the sake of living a good life and living well.
And that makes perfect sense to me. And when I was reading, I said, okay, did I write this wrong? Wealthy Wealthy. I should have done a better job on my notes. I'm so glad that you explained that. But your health, this is something that so many of us do. I was having a stern talk with myself this morning. You know, I bent over to pick up a cat and instantly my back did something that it shouldn't have done. And I went, what the heck? Where did that come from? And all of a sudden I'm strapping an ice pack on myself. That shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, it really is that our body talks to us. You know, I mean, we're going to talk about money today, but I can talk about health the entire time as well, because I had to go on a journey of wellness, of really learning about first love of self, is that when we can love ourselves, then we're more apt to take care of ourselves, where we put ourselves first. And, you know, we hear so much about the self-care piece. So the mindset is self-care, the mindset is wellness. And then, you know, putting that into action, it's what do we do to take care of ourselves? And when we take care of ourselves and we feel well, it's amazing how much more we can enjoy life and how much more we can produce, because just that little tweak in your back, or if your back goes out, life isn't so pleasant anymore, or you can't do the next podcast because, you know, you're going to the doctor trying to take care of the back pain. So, you know, so much on health and wellness, but what I love to talk about there is that, you know, there's this thing called pain. And, you know, many times we just think pain is aging, or we think pain comes with the territory, or, you know, we maybe take an aspirin to cover up the pain. And then, you know, we don't really pay that much attention to it if it's not chronic, or if it's not so bad where we have to go to the doctor. But what pain is pain tells us, pain is our body talking to us. And it's like just a knock on the door, or, you know, ringing the doorbell, is our body saying, ding dong, pay attention to me. Something's going on here. I'm just trying to have a conversation in my own language to be able to say, there's something going on. Would you please pay attention to me? And so that when we can take out like pain is maybe aging or things, it's just, yeah, as we age, our body might talk to us a little bit more because we've let more things maybe go by the wayside. But ultimately, we want to get in this relationship with our body, that we listen to our body when it talks to us, and that we take care of our body. And we have this really nice symbiotic relationship. And it's always a journey. Like there's always the next thing that our body's saying, okay, you paid attention to me over there, but maybe now we need to pay attention over here. And once I came to understand this, I developed this different relationship with my body and relate in a different mindset and appreciation for wellness and health. And then going over to the money side, what's so interesting is that, again, just to play on the name of my business, which is Wealthy Wealthy, is that they're money and health are very symbiotic, and they're very much aligned, that In fact, if you look at the etymology of the word wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, it first kind of started with wellness, W-E-L-L, and that they were one and the same, that our health was our wealth, and that wellness, way back from the beginning of time, wellness was that first thing to pay attention to. So yeah, just the etymology of the health with wealth, and then, you know, money and prosperity kind of came down one lineage and wellness went down the other. But it's just understand, if you go all the way up to the beginning, they really actually mean the same thing. And with money, it's getting back to, like I said, in the health side, once I really developed a relationship with myself and with my body, and that relationship went from one that where I ignored it and abdicated it and exploited my body and used my body. And again, it probably sourced back to some feeling of unworthiness, very deep subconscious level. But once I changed my relationship, that's when I started healing. That's when I started getting better. That's when I moved off kind of my deathbed, where things were falling apart so fast, and my body started to heal. And I understood that, oh my gosh, I have so much control over my healing. I don't need to abdicate this to the doctors and to all these different places out there that I was trying to chase to get my health back. It was an internal job. And it became like 90% internal and then 10% using doctors and other resources and things. But I had to take control of that and develop this new relationship. And like I said, when I created this relationship with me that was based out of love and intention and attention and a symbiotic relationship and appreciation and gratitude and source energy and all these different elements, like I said, my body just started healing. I mean, it's as close to a miracle that I can ever explain what a miracle is. But I experienced a miracle where I went from doctors said I was dying to moving to a place of total health and wellness. Now I move that over to the money side, and money is just the same, is that with money, when we can develop a relationship with our money, that's when our financial situation starts to change. And like in health, we can be diseased. And at the early stages of disease, we might not feel it too much. We might not have too much consequence, especially when we're younger. We don't really feel the bad habits of our body. But as we start to age and there's, 10, 20, 30 years of ignoring our body, then all of a sudden those small things turn into big problems. Let's say like diabetes or autoimmune disease or these different things. And that happens over time. That's usually due to some form of neglect or some type of misuse of our body in a way, and that we become diseased. And the same thing happens with our money, is that when we neglect our money because we don't have a relationship with it, when we neglect it, when we ignore it, when we don't pay attention to it, when we take it for granted, when we're never grateful or appreciative of what we do have because we're always focused on what we don't have, when we're always comparing ourselves to other people and feel like it's never enough. And again, kind of goes back to, we feel we're never enough. But that really, or we're abdicating our money, we ignore it because we're afraid of what we might see if we open up the bank account. So it's just better to, like ignorance is bliss type of mentality. But that type of relationship, what that means is that our money is not going to work for us. Our money is just going to disappear and evaporate. Our money is going to become diseased. And that feels like paycheck to paycheck. That feels like never enough. That feels like debt. That feels heaviness, weight, anxiety. That just like if we put on a lot of weight and we're feeling uncomfortable in our weight and our body, what debt is, for example, debt is that same manifestation on the money side of feeling that extra weight. That debt is heavy. It's like we can't shake it off. Even those little bitty diets and trying to do a little bit of budgeting and dieting our money just doesn't quite work. It won't work because our relationship with money is dysfunctional. And, with the weight loss stuff, a lot of times the first start with weight loss is not the diet. It's going back to developing a relationship with our body and getting to a place of self-love. And when we get to those places, then changing our diet and our lifestyle is a lot easier. Again, jumping back to money, it's the same thing. is that once we start to develop this relationship with our money, and this is why I wrote the book, Falling for Money, a romance novel for your bank account, because that was like the underlying message of the book is that I want you to fall for your money to develop this relationship of love and compassion and kindness and respect and appreciation and gratitude and bring up this high frequency. And when we have a relationship of love with our money in a healthy way, then we're going to treat it differently. We're going to want to open our books. We're going to want to learn about money. We'll want to create a financial literacy and competence so that we know how money works, so that we can start putting our money to work for us as opposed to us always chasing the money. We're in a culture of chasing the money to buy things that we can look good to other people. And that usually means because we don't feel good enough ourselves. And then we get in these bad habits, and then money starts to control us versus the other way around. And the first thing we want to do to get out of that trap is, I'll go back to the beginning here, is to develop this relationship with our money where we go from neglect to attention and intention, and start to look at our mindsets and our patterns and our beliefs and our narratives and our stories about money that usually come all the way back from childhood. And these beliefs and habits have gone unnoticed for our entire lives. But once we say, hey, today's the day I want to develop a new relationship with my money, and I want to build a relationship that's going to put me in the direction of financial freedom and independence and creativity and surplus and abundance and prosperity, that's the day, then we'll start to look at these things that have been plaguing us when it comes to money our entire lives. So I'll complete there by just saying that when I went into this whole discovery process, I learned, like, oh my gosh, money and health really are the same and go hand in hand, and the same principles apply.
They really do. And I have to tell you, I knew that at some level. You know, if you don't feel good, you're not going to work well. If you don't feel good, you're probably going to bang your head on the desk and say, oh, I've got a headache, and then go take a break. You know, you're not going to be in any kind of a headset or an emotional place where you can say, you know what, I feel fine. I've got this. Now let me go look at this. What can I create today? What can I fix today? Who can I be of assistance to today? That's a big thing. If you do the kind of work you do and the kind of work I do, you have to show up and actually help other people. It's mandatory. And you can't do that if you feel like garbage all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that can be on the more meta minor scale that, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I sleep like crap, I'm not productive the next day. And I've really come to, you know, really learn the importance of sleep, for example. But something as little as just not getting a very good night's sleep can have a tremendous effect on performance. And many times what happens is we just get used to a status quo or feeling mediocre, or we just say, hey, this is just aging or something, as opposed to looking at it and be like, no, there might be something going on underneath. But it can be something as simple as not sleeping well, like you said, that just having a minor headache that comes from something, you know, or just having a little bit of a stomach ache, or just starting to have kind of these chronic things where we're not feeling our best. And usually the first thing that shows up in our body is low energy. And everything's energy. Money's energy, our bodies are energy. I mean, everything, if it's alive, it's energetic. So when we're low on energy in our bodies, that means our productivity level is going to be lower. And many times we try to push through it, but that push then just creates more negative impact down the line. And our body just finally at some point wants to give up. But that's what happens over a long period of time. And we don't notice just the day by day little incremental places where we're just getting slower and slower because our energy is getting lower and lower. And so there's that happens. In my case, for example, I thought I was fine. I mean, I ran a marathon 3 days before I hit the wall, and I had no clue because I wasn't paying attention. In hindsight, my body was screaming at me, but mind over matter, that was my marathon mantra. push forward, you know, the sleep is for the weak type of mentality that seemed to work for me at the time. And it worked until it didn't work. But what I learned was the day my body gave out completely, I mean, it took me a decade to build, you know, to become a multimillionaire, to build a seven-figure business, to build this successful identity in my marketplace and in my industry. And I worked my ass off for those 10 years. I mean, just grinding and hustling and everything that I could do. And I did well. Great. I got the t-shirt, the Gary Vee t-shirt. It took less than 6 months for that empire to fall apart. I mean, it was baffling. 10 years of grind for 6 months of me not being able to show up because I was so sick, for it completely to fall apart. And so that became, again, just that big awakening of like, oh my gosh, I've got this in the reverse order. So it's just, you know, I'll complete that by saying that, yeah, like every day, if we're not feeling great, it affects our kind of day-to-day overall performance. But then something catastrophic could happen that takes us out. And it's crazy how fast it can all fall apart if we haven't set our life up in a way that won't allow that to happen. Because what I found out is that I'd built a house of cards and one little thing took the cards out and the whole thing came tumbling down. So again, I just can't emphasize the importance of, while we're in the game of growing our career and making money and being in this financial journey, not to take our health for granted and at the same time, not take our money for granted.
I don't even want to interrupt you. Really don't. I'm listening, I'm taking notes, and I'm thinking, why haven't I met this woman before? I'm so glad you're here. But what I wrote down, and you're talking about high frequency and energy, and I wrote underneath those notes, emotional worth. If we are constantly saying, oh, I don't feel good, oh, that didn't turn out well, ah, and we start whining, I think that just shoots us straight in the foot. That takes us further down that rabbit hole that we're already in, whether we know it or don't know it.
Yeah, absolutely right, Denise. There's so many layers to this, you know, and when you start peeling back the onion, you could just keep peeling back and peeling back. And that's why I can talk on this stuff days straight and never run out of things to say, because there are so many layers and nuances. But really, when we get down underneath the last, peel back the next layer of the onion, we get down to what I just call the fundamentals, or kind of these universal laws and truths. And once we understand those better, everything in life tends to work better. Once we discover what these fundamental, natural, universal laws are, and then when we abide by them, life just becomes easier. But when it comes to, I'll talk about my expertise, which is money, but there's these two elements of money. And well, let's three, actually. Two are kind of conflated, but I'm going to separate them. So the one is what I call money mindset. And money mindset,
I just wrote that word down. I have to tell you, I just wrote that word down. And then you said it. Okay, keep talking.
Excellent. So money mindset, and again, there's hundreds of books on money mindset and plenty of things to listen to or read. But to just synthesize it down to kind of at the base of what it means, is our money mindset is usually established by this time we're 7 to 10 years old. And then it's baked in. So think about that most of us adults are, we're playing out this money mindset of a 7 to 10 year old. And we don't even know it, because this mindset is so programmed and we're unaware of it. And 80% of what we do day to day is subconscious. So once I learned that, I went on a self-discovery archaeological type dig for my whole life, because I'm like, okay, I really want to get to underneath what's running 80% of my outcomes, and realizing like, oh my gosh, there's so much underneath. And so our subconscious is ruling most of our lives. And again, this is this part of us that's unexamined, and it's in all categories of life, and money's no exception. So we'll just talk about money. But mindset is what I call our beliefs about money. And one of my mentors, his name is Jim Quick, he says behaviors follows beliefs. So if our behaviors with money aren't turning out a place where we have financial abundance, financial surplus, where we're not stressed out about money, where we feel great, where we know we're on the right track, where, you know, those would be, then we're doing, our beliefs are probably pretty solid. But if we're in an opposite place where money is month to month, it's, we're feel anxiety about it, depression about it, we're fighting with our spouse about it, our kids don't get it, blah, blah, blah. We can go back to, okay, probably our beliefs somewhere about money are not on target. And so that's the first place to look. So the thing is how you start unpacking your beliefs is an exercise I do with my students in my money school. Is one of the first exercises is we peel back that first onion is what did your parents, what did you hear those little listening ears when you were a kid? What did your parents say about money? And write those down. What were things that those little 7-year-old, 8-year-old listening ears heard all the time? Was it things like money doesn't grow on trees? We can't afford that. That type of money is just for rich people. It's rich people are greedy. You know, anything that you heard. And it sounds pretty simple and elementary, but you wouldn't even realize the profound realizations you'll have by realizing that, oh my gosh, these things are all I heard. And that was the programming. Just like we get programmed if we, our first language is English, then that's programmed. We don't go into the world speaking Spanish or Greek. We speak English because our minds were programmed with that language. Well, we've been programmed with a money language without realizing it. And we will continue to speak out that language through our behaviors if we don't go back and clear those. So with my money students, for example, we do some clearing so we can clear out these old beliefs. But we want to replace those beliefs with something more powerful. But what I talk about too to prove this out is like, okay, what did you hear as a kid? And something I heard as a kid all the time is we can't afford it. I started in a trailer home. It was, we didn't have any money. I mean, it was very impoverished conditions. You know, as a kid that young, I didn't know any better, but all the time, I mean, every day I heard we can't afford it, combined with the fact that my parents fought about money all the time in screaming matches. So what that did is implanted in me as a kid, one, we're poor, we can't afford it. That's just the type of people we are. There's those other people that live on the other side of tracks. We're not them. And then it was planted in me that money is not a safe topic because my parents would throw, my mom would throw a glass across the room and it would shatter, not at any person, but just she'd get so upset at my dad. And so as a kid, I was very scared that anytime this money conversation comes up, it's unsafe, unsafe, unsafe. And you think that as humans, our number one thing is survival and safety. So for many of us, money was not a safe topic because our parents argued about it, and or it's something that was not safe to talk about because it was just never talked about. And we are implanted with these beliefs and these narratives. And then they play out as adults. And so what happened before I started doing this work myself, and my first money mentor was asking me to do these same types of exercises, I realized like, oh yeah, not only did I hear that as a child, but what was I telling my children? I was just repeating to my children basically what my parents were repeating to me. Oh, we can't afford that, honey. Nope, we can't afford that right now. And so then I was passing this on as this lineage to my children. So again, it'll just continue forever if it goes unexamined. So that's the mindset piece is looking at these beliefs and narratives, these stories we tell ourselves. Now the narrative comes back through our, what I call the language of money, which is what narrative is like story. So what stories do we tell ourselves? And that's what you were saying, Denise, is that when we tell ourselves in some form or fashion that I'm not smart enough to manage my money, or I'm not good with numbers, or I'm not valuable enough in the marketplace, so I can't make enough money. And I don't, you know, my self-worth is, I don't believe in myself enough. So I have to buy certain things to make me look important or successful to other people, even though I really can't afford them because I put it on my credit card. And these are all signs of us trying to keep up and look okay to others. And there's nothing bad about that. It's somewhat human, but it's just to understand that if we're doing these things unconsciously, they're usually coming from these deep mindsets and beliefs and narratives that we have that, again, have gone unexamined. And we need to clean those up because everybody's enough. We were born enough. We've been conditioned to think otherwise. And so, you know, we want to go back and start replacing these narratives is how do we talk to ourselves? You know, there's people, a lot of people talk about affirmations. I'm not one that really promotes or, you know, endorses affirmations. It's not that they're going to hurt anything, but it's not the affirmations per se. It's really looking at what do we say to ourselves when we talk to ourselves? Are we nice to ourselves or are we not nice to ourselves? And that's the stuff that we want to start replacing the mean things we say to ourselves and replace those with nice things to ourselves. And it doesn't have to be an affirmation like, hey, I'm going to make $1 million. Nothing wrong with that. But the affirmation is, hey, self, I love you. Hey, self, we're so cool. Hey, self, look what we accomplished today. And that's all the mindset piece. And so there's the money mindset, but the money mindset is a byproduct of our overall mindset. So we just, again, it's getting down to that underneath that base layer. So that's mindset. The second piece is relationship with money. And I've already talked about that, but relationship means just that, how we relate to it. And like any relationship, if we have a spouse or a significant other in some form or fashion, what's going to happen to that relationship if we ignore our spouse? If every time we see our spouse, we complain about our spouse, if we're always telling our spouse there's never enough, they're never enough, if we neglect our spouse, if we're always complaining, if we never have anything positive to say, if we're abdicating date night to go hang out with friends and say, hey, somebody else go spend time with you. I think it's pretty obvious that we're going to, you know, that relationship probably isn't going to thrive. It's not a healthy relationship because if our partner feels neglected and complained and never good enough and all the things, they're not going to reciprocate with anything positive. So we're not going to get back what we want, but ultimately they're probably going to leave. Maybe not leave physically, but at least leave emotionally. And same thing, like I talked about with the relationship with our body, any type of relationship. The same with our money is that if we have this relationship where we're always complaining about money, it's never enough, that we abdicate it, we ignore it, we neglect it, we abuse it by disrespecting it. And whenever the topic money comes up, there's never any gratitude. It's always this feeling of never enough and woe is me and money's always a problem. That relationship is the money's going to leave. It's going to leave energetically.
Christina, that's what you're sending out to the universe. You know, I don't care what anybody says. The universe listens to us all the time. So be careful what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's the big listening ears, right? But absolutely. So the universe is always listening. What you said, I 100% believe that to be true. Nobody can convince me otherwise through my own experience, through my life, and now working with thousands of others. Also, there's, you know, depending on how much anybody listening is really learned about quantum physics and about energy and quantum energy, and really how the universe works at a quantum level, it's everything's vibration. Again, when you get down to the base level, everything's vibrating. And this is really what quantum is saying, is that we match on those frequencies. And that's why when we walk into a room, if it's a bunch of people complaining, we're going to walk into that energy right away. If we walk into a room where everybody's laughing and having a good time and singing or dancing, and they have these huge smiles on their faces, we're automatically same self that we are, but we're either going to be uplifted or we're going to be brought down, because we're always going to match the frequency. That's why environment and everything is so important, and why we want our kids to hang around with certain other kids, and why our impersonal networks are so important, why it's important not to get lost in the news and negative media and all the things, because it's this very low vibration. And that's that, like begets like. So when we're looking at relationship with money, when we can start, like you said, the universe is always listening. And when we're, every time we get paid, we're grateful for the money coming in. When we're grateful for our bills, because we're grateful for the electricity and we're grateful for the water and we're grateful for the running toilets and we're grateful for the shower and we're grateful for the car and we're grateful that when we can turn all of our money into gratitude, gratitude is one of the highest frequencies. When we have a loving, kind, compassionate, respectful relationship with our money, that high vibration begets more money. So just by changing the frequency, by changing how we relate to money, the money starts to shift. Just automatically, money just becomes easier and you just wake up and you feel uplifted. Now you want to spend more time with your money because you notice that your money wants it to you to talk to it and wants you to be appreciative of it. And then it rewards you back. So it's this beautiful thing that happens. It's like magic. I just call it the money magic. I can't explain it in logical, rational terms. It just works and it's just the way it is. And so those are the first two parts of money, the money mindset and then our relationship. And then there's this third piece that most of, I'd say, a lot of my peers that teach relationship with money and mindset with money, this piece gets left out a good portion of the time. And each one of these are equally important. They are three legs of a three-legged stool. Like if you have two, the stool's going to fall. If you have one, the stool's going to fall. You need all three legs for this sturdy money foundation, this just a sturdy money stool. And this third one is what I call money competence. And it's money competence. It's the skill of money, the knowledge of money. It's the literacy of money, that money is an art, kind of what we just talked about. But there's the science of money. There's the black and white. There's the accounting. There's the bookkeeping. There's the how many dollars are actually sitting in your bank account. That's this 3D version of money that can be counted. That's why it's called accounting. And so what's required is that money has rules. It has laws. It's a game that is played on a game field, and you can't betray the rules or you're going to be kicked out of the game. But many times, again, into adulthood, we're carrying all this old baggage that we've already talked about, and we've never spent any time to learn about the skill of money, the competence, the knowledge. And money requires skill. The thing is, it's skill that we could have learned in middle school, high school. And if we would have learned it then, we would never have money problems. But we were never taught money in school. So we go into many people's cases, their entire lives struggling with money, even if they're making a six-figure income, a high six-figure income. More money doesn't mean less money problems, fewer money problems. In many cases, it means more. Why? Because there's a skill to money. That's why we've heard of the lottery winners lose all their money within 5 years of winning the lottery. That's why if you do the studies of professional ball players, NBA, NFL, any of them, fill in the blank, baseball, 83% of all of these multi-million dollar paid celebrities and athletes, they're broke within 5 years of retirement. And they have to go get a regular job. So they made millions of dollars thinking that because I made all this money, I've got money for the rest of my life. But no, they lose it all because they don't understand money as a skill, like what to do with it. So that's the thing that's a little bit complex with money, is you have to uncover all these things. You have to learn these skills that we could all learn in middle school and high school. But we not only have to learn them, we have to apply them. And if we're ever going to become financially free, which I think that's the goal of everybody, is to create that financial independence and freedom at some level, and that we need to then have a mindset that means that we can continue to keep it and grow it, and we won't lose it and abuse it and then lose it again, because we can make a lot of money and lose a lot of money and make a lot of money and lose a lot of money if our mindset and those childhood narratives aren't clean up. And then, and develop that relationship. So I'll stop there, but it's just to understand really the symbiotic relationship between these three areas of money, and that we really have to do the work in all three. But the good news is it's not complicated. I teach all of this, how to do all of this in a 12-week course, and how to you clean up your mindset, you clean up your narratives, we replace them with everything that is the powerful mindset and high frequency, and what to say to yourself when you talk to yourself, and clearing a lot of the things that are trapped in that subconscious mind that we don't even know are trapped. And then learning just again these very basic fundamental skills of money, and organize and systematize and automate it in a way that money all of a sudden starts working for us versus us working for it. And it's just, again, it's so simple how fast that can happen, but it takes the work to put all that into place so that we can get out of this month to month and start building that surplus and that prosperity that we all want to have.
And Christina, I have to tell you, and I wrote this down, you ought to see my notes. I'm scribbling like a crazy person. I never looked at money as having, you had to have skills for it. I thought it was just something to manage, but I like the word skills a whole lot better. And checking your beliefs about it, you know, you talked a bit about how we talk to ourselves. I'll be honest with you, until I caught myself being really ugly with myself often, and it happened because of this podcast. Probably about 10 years ago, I had a man on the show who was talking about, he was very close to death. He was dying, and you know, something similar to what you've been talking about. And he did what he needed to do in terms of surgery and this and that and the other, but he went inward and he started practicing what he termed extreme gratitude. And he caught my eye. He caught my ear. I started paying attention and I started listening to how I was speaking to myself. And I'll be honest with you, if I spoke to anybody in a Walmart parking lot the way I talk to myself, I'd need bail money. So I have to catch myself on a regular basis still.
Yeah, it is. I think we hear that often, is that, man, if we talk to others the way we talk to ourselves, we wouldn't have any friends. And yeah.
Seriously. But, you know, it's what you're talking about is, you know, having that gratitude and having those relationships and having those skills. I think it's so important. And you're right. We don't recognize that we don't have them, or we need them, or where to go to find them. And while you're talking, I'm thinking about the things I heard as a child, very similar to what you're talking about. You know, my mom made our clothes. We looked like hell, or thought we did, because she would buy one bolt of material and dress all of us boys and girls in the same thing. And we were just embarrassed. We really were, not thinking about how hard she had to work to keep us fed and clothed. We didn't have the gratitude for it. We were just embarrassed.
And you think money, you start making all these associations. I mean, it's fascinating work. I mean, I love what I do, because the big ahas that I see happen in people, then the transformations on the spot by just doing some of the simple work, it's like, no wonder, you know, when we make the associations. But in your case, think of like money equals embarrassment. So those things become linked, and all these links, that's how our brain patterns is between links to save space. So it's not like it has this long story of rationalization and why and this. It's just, it links money, embarrassment, money, embarrassment. So now we fast forward into the future, and the subconscious mind still believes that to be true because we've not cleared it yet. And then it's like, hey, if I have a lot of money, or just anything to do with money equals embarrassment. And so we have to clear that out, because it's going to get in our way of that. It's going to be a mindset that's not working. It's going to impede that relationship with money that we've talked about, or it's going to keep us from learning more about it. So all these little associations, we want to write those down and clear them. Like, that doesn't serve me anymore. No, money's not embarrassing. Money's beautiful. Money is a gift. Money is something that I'm grateful that I'm able to earn. And I'm so grateful for what it does. And I'm not embarrassed. In fact, I'm inspired by my creativity and what I can do to learn and grow and become, and maybe make more money, and what I can do with the more money that I make, and how I can help others, and how it can be this beautiful thing that can help me me and my family and philanthropy and build businesses and impact millions more lives. The more money I have, the more people I can impact. What's embarrassing about that?
Exactly. And it never occurred to me, you know, I will see a certain, you know, you get on Instagram and you see clothes from, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, and, you know, even earlier than that, you're like, oh, geez, I remember those days. Ah, and you're instantly stuck back in, you know, grade school thinking, I hope nobody sees me. Really?
Yeah, totally.
And I look back now, I'm so sorry, Mom. I know you worked your butt off and I didn't appreciate it.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the work too. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. But when by what happens automatically by doing this type of work is that happens is we've been holding these resentments. Even again, this is it's all subconscious. Like our conscious mind wouldn't think this way, but our subconscious is trapped into all the old patterning until it's been repatterned. And that's why we have to repattern ourselves, because it's those old patterns that are stuck that are still ruling. But when we go in and start looking at what's underneath and realize like, oh, wow, I have this link with money and embarrassment and these things, and that's what's been trapped. And I can replace that with appreciation like, Mom, wow, look what she did. She was doing this and this and made our clothes and helped us do this. And she was a single mom and she was raising three kids. And then all of a sudden we just rewired that same kind of connection of embarrassment with appreciation and gratitude by going back to that same spot. And we can start looking at those different places and just clean one up after the other.
Yeah, I just had a thought right when you said that. And I haven't thought of this forever, but going back to my mom making our clothes literally out of a bolt of cloth, it didn't matter if it was paisley or checks or purple stripes. The boys made sure got shirts and we got our little dresses and we were related. We looked like we were related. But you know what? I don't sew. Mm-hmm. I refuse to sew. My attitude is if it can't be fixed with a safety pin, it goes in the trash. And I just figured out where that came from.
Isn't that something?
I just scared the heck out of myself.
Yeah, I just got goosebumps on that one.
And my mom is gone, but I would, if she were not gone, I would be on the phone right after we're done here going, I think I owe you an apology or 50 or something. But I had no idea that my absolute aversion to sewing anything, I won't even put a button on. I'm that averse to it.
Is that wild? Like when you think about that, thinking that patterning is that strong that your subconscious yeah. mind has ruled this and kind of completely unaware. Like it's remarkable what's underneath when we start looking at it. And then it's equally remarkable how our life shifts and transforms so quickly as a result of going back and just doing, I mean, you can clear these things so fast once you're aware of them and finding that initial kind of what I call the root cause of that planting of that, you know. And mine, for example, Denise, was cooking that I wouldn't cook because I had all this childhood kind of trauma around food and cooking and different things that I had witnessed as a kid and that got programmed. And I just refused to cook. I just had whatever adult narrative I had. I was too busy and X, Y, Z. I now have a love of cooking, but I didn't realize that same thing. Like, oh my God, my whole life, I've just not really thought about food or cooking. And I've just put it in this category of, I don't care about that, that links back to that same beginning. And it really is crazy when you start looking at it.
And you know, what's interesting. I mean, my brain is just overflowing right now and I'm going to have to sit with myself and look, and I'm going to ask you for some tips about this, but I'm really, you said cooking. I don't sew. My sister doesn't cook for a lot of the reasons you just spoke of. We lived in the same house. We were only 18 months apart. We saw things very differently.
Exactly. Isn't that wild? I mean, if she went back to her root thing, she's going to uncover different things that you'll cover. You might uncover like the same events, but how you related to those events is how it gets planted. Absolutely. And so it's almost laughable, like, oh my God, I didn't sew my whole life. And she's saying, oh my God, that same event, events. I don't cook my whole life. And And then you can laugh about it. But yeah, again, you don't know how it's planted until you take a look at it, until you kind of, open up the hood.
You really don't. So, can you give us a few quick tips to uncover this? I mean, you've opened up my brain. So, I'm assuming that you've got some ideas that people can sit down with today or as soon as they hear this and say, okay, let me do some repatterning. Let me look at what is really holding me back. Or for the sake of, keeping it clean, I guess, just makes me feel like crap when I think this thought. What do I do now?
An exercise that everybody can do is what it's called the sourcing exercise. And it's going back and looking at, pick out a belief, let's just say a money belief that I can't afford it. And okay, now the exercise is go back to the first time you can remember hearing that or experiencing that. And just let your subconscious mind figure it out and locate it. Like, I was 4 years old and I heard the words, I can't afford it. Like, whatever comes to you is going to come to you. But it's looking for that root plant of when that belief got planted. And then look at it. Then the exercise is, how did that belief serve me? Like, what good has it done? Kind of having that belief and holding that belief, and where did it come from? And then start to just unpack and say, how does holding that belief today not serve me anymore? How is it getting in the way? If I continue to hold that belief that was planted, I think, when I was 4 years old, then how is that going to play, continue to play out in my life? Can I forgive my parents, or can I forgive whatever happened that moment? Because a lot of things get planted. Things are always planted because of an emotional. That's where things plant in our body. There's some emotional event that happened, and it could be something like our mother screamed at us, or our dad left and never came back, or just it could be a trauma. There's so much money trauma. Like, trauma is like the word of the day today, and it talks about how trauma affects our psychology and our adulthood. Well, money trauma happens. Money is a huge portion of trauma, because most all of us have been traumatized one way or another when it comes to money. Just feeling embarrassed going to school because you feel like you don't have enough money is traumatizing as a kid. So money trauma is deeply, deeply part of that unconscious plant. But everything that's planted, things that aren't emotional events, don't get planted. So try to go back to that first memory of that emotional event where it got planted and forgive it, and then replace it with gratitude. Like, hey, this served me for a while, because I just realized like how that belief might have served me for a while, but now it no longer serves me, so I can forgive it and
Right.
let it go, and I can forgive everybody that was in that event. And that's just called a clearing. So anybody can start doing that. It's really great if you have a coach or somebody that can guide you through it, but it is certainly something that you can do on your own.
It seems listening to you, and I'm starting to recognize this, that the things that implanted on us when we were young and kind of maybe still stick with us had their root in shame of some description or another.
It's shame, and shame is so deep. And the feeling of shame keeps us from doing behaviors that might cause us to feel shameful. And again, this is a 7-year-old that's feeling shame, and a subconscious mind of a 7-year-old that is still playing out as a 30-year-old, 40-year-old, or 50-year-old. So, two things with shame. One, it's deeply wounding. So, it's so traumatic in a way. That feeling of shame is so bad and negative that we want to avoid it at all costs. So that played out as an adult is affecting us with money somehow, because that shame game is still ruling. The second piece of shame is that shame is very low vibration. And so when we're still carrying out stories of shame, these deep subconscious that money is shameful in some form or fashion, that's low frequency. And again, that's going to keep us trapped in low frequency money, which is not where abundance lives, where it is not where prosperity live, which is not where, just manifestation and growth and creation and collaboration and all these very positive high vibration pieces of money live and exist. So you're absolutely right. Shame is usually one of the predominant feelings we're carrying with us, and it's keeping us trapped.
This is amazing. And I have to ask you, can you come back? Because I had so many questions. I wanted to, talk to you about your achievements as a millionaire coach, the concept of the freedom number, which we haven't managed to touch on because I didn't want to interrupt you, building a seven-figure business and a personal net worth. There's just so many things that I had on my list of things to talk about that were, can you come back? Because I don't want to finish this.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back. And, just maybe that can be part two of a two-part series, because the most important part is what we just talked about, that this is step one, because all the stuff I talk about in step two, maybe episode two, which is the dollars and cents piece of being a multimillionaire, financially free, financially independent, prosperous, that is a byproduct of the stuff we've talked today. That's more the pragmatic piece, and this is more the emotional piece.
And we needed both. I mean,
and
there's
we need
no
both.
question. Yeah, no
Yes.
question. So I will definitely get you to come back as soon as we can get you scheduled. So before I let you go, and I hate to, but we're running out of time, is there anything else you want to share with the audience that you think they need to know?
I think we gave everybody a really good exercise for today. And I would say that I offer a free copy of my book, a digital copy of my book. If anybody listening would like to pick that up, we cover some of the stuff we talked about today in the book, and it's called fallingformoney.com, fallingformoney.com. And you can get a digital copy of the book. And yeah, I talk about all this type of stuff on my podcast as well, called Wealthy Wealthy. And I look forward to coming back, and we'll jump into the dollars and cents of money.
Excellent. And I was going to ask you if you could share your online presence, and you did it. So thank you for doing that. Is there any preferred means of contact for those who wish to chat with you, work with you, hire you? How do they reach you?
So thank you. If anybody's bold enough, and bold is what makes you billions. I'm not a billionaire, not even close, but I like bold equals billions. But bold, being bold is a character trait of successful seven figure plus earners. So no bold, no seven figures. It's just, they go hand in hand. So the bold action is that anybody that wants to do a clearing with me, what I call money breakthrough call. What we do is I listen for about 45 minutes, and then I give some advice. And then we talk about if there's anything else that I have to offer that I can help you. But that it's if you want to be bold and set up a call, we'll have a great time. There's nothing to be afraid of. It doesn't matter where you are financially. I've been there, and I love having these conversations. I talk with people every day, and it's the highlight of my day. And if I can give a little tip or piece of advice, it makes me so happy, and I'm so fulfilled that I made a difference that day. So anybody that calls me is actually doing me a favor. And that's at Kristina.com/call. And that's KristinA, how you spell my first name, Kristina.com/call, CALL. And that puts you on my calendar, and that sets up a breakthrough call. So that's the bold action to take. And then anything else, I'm on Instagram, and my Instagram is at Kristina Wise, KristinaWise. I know you're putting a link to all this in the show notes. So, but on Instagram, I just do some money tips and some life tips and things like that. And you can always DM me if you want, and we can connect that way.
Excellent. Kristina, it has been a sincere pleasure talking with you today. And I genuinely appreciate our friend Terry Murphy introducing us and you being here today. So, and I look forward to having you come back. So to our audience, as we conclude today's episode, your feedback means a lot to me. So if you found the show helpful, please support us with a quick review on iTunes. Your input is really vital in my mission to inspire and empower more individuals. So don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a review, and share your Partner in Success Radio with friends and colleagues. And be sure to go find Kristina Wise on the web and connect with her. And thank you for tuning in. Kristina, again, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.